The basic description that the Buddha gives of in the when he describes the mindfulness, there's sort of four constituents: ardent, fully aware, mindful, having put away longing and displeasure for the world. These are characteristics of the mind of mindfulness. So that there's this quality of ardent atapi in Pali, which means this application of effort. There's an effort involved. There's an energetic quality to it. It's not just kind of slack and flaccid. There's an energy to it. There's an ardent is the word that's usually translated in English. And just naturally, I mean, it's not a forced effort. For mindfulness to be, say, in its proper balance, there's this quality of kind of a vigor that's there. Because, I say, when you're being mindful of something, you're engaged with it. You're interested in it. There's a willingness to put forth that attention, because it reciprocates with a nurturing of the heart. So when we're really mindful, there's a sense of you know, the mind being very satisfied. The heart is really nurtured by that application of mindfulness. It's not a burden or a chore to be mindful. It's what really nourishes us as human beings, really. It's when we're unmindful, when we're scattered, when we're distracted, that it's really disturbing or distracting for the mind. So this sense of atapi, ardent, putting forth of effort. The next quality is sampajano, which is usually translated as well as fully aware or clearly comprehending, fully understanding. And in the commentaries, the sampajanya is said to have the characteristic of non-confusion. And its function is to investigate. And it manifests as scrutiny. So that there's this investigation, and sometimes it's used in synonymously with wisdom. So that this application of wisdom, and mindfulness is not a static quality of just being mindful of a fixed thing or fixed attention. There's a dynamic quality that is investigating, is scrutinizing, is weighing the benefits or the drawbacks. There's a sense of recognition of time and place, situation that one's in. So that's this characteristic of non-confusion, function of investigation, manifesting as scrutiny, these characteristics of sampajanya, so that there's clear comprehension. And particularly in meditation, it's very necessary to have that quality, because you're always needing to make slight adjustments. You know, when we're paying attention to the breath, we're always needing to be making slight adjustments to either the meditation object, or the degree of effort that we're putting in, or the balancing of our investigation, as opposed to the degree of calmness, so that there's this sense of the mind. You're always needing to make slight adjustments in order to find a point of balance, and this is the function of mindfulness, but particularly in its aspect of sampajanya, or clear comprehension. The quality the third quality, sati, is usually what is translated as mindfulness. Again, the commentaries say the characteristic, mindfulness has the characteristic of remembering. And its function is not forgetting. And it manifests as guarding. So that there's this function of the way that mindfulness is working is a sense of remembering what we're actually doing. Remembering to be attentive to the breath. Remembering to be attentive to the posture. Remembering what mental state is useful and beneficial for working with, bringing up positive, wholesome qualities in the mind. And it's guarding the mind in a sense of protecting the wholesome qualities within the mind, that which tends to calmness or brightness or a sense of settledness and well-being. These are qualities that the meditation is general application of mindfulness, and particularly in meditation, it's important to be attending to what is useful, what's beneficial, what's helping the mind settle and become clear. And it's like, you're training the mind, you realize that there's some things that we shouldn't just let the mind wander off and be getting caught up in. It's too disturbing. Thoughts of ill will and aversion, anger. And it's really, the mind gets absorbed into it, or desire, attachment. If we just let the mind merrily go on in those streams of thought, then it disturbs the well-being, the wholesomeness of the mind. It's calm, it's peace. So in the same way that one, say with a small child or a baby, you look over it, you keep an eye on it, and if it's, you provide set out some toys and things to play with, so it gets interested in it and goes over and picks up a pair of scissors. I mean, you don't just sort of let them play with a pair of scissors. You take the scissors away and you hide them. So in the same way, in meditation, you want to be protecting, guarding the mind from its picking up objects that are not helpful for it, or dangerous to it. And so that there's, especially in the mindfulness and breathing, there's many, many ways that we can be using the mindfulness of breathing. It's awareness of the, and the Buddha gives this whole scope. I've spent this the past 3 weeks really talking about all the different ways of using mindfulness of breathing and using aspects of the body, feelings, mind, dhammas as the foundations for applying attention. And there's lots of, say, wholesome, skillful things, ways that we can be directing attention. But there's also, there's so many unskillful things that we can be doing. We have to be attentive in guarding the mind. In the same way that there's, you might have a whole medicine cabinet full of medicines, and you have to know what the thing. See, I've got a headache, but you don't go in and just sort of randomly take out some medicine from the medicine chest and say, well, it's medicine, so I'll take it. You have to sort of read the label and say, oh yeah, right. Well, this is actually something for a headache, as opposed to medicine for something else. So in the same way with the different tools, techniques, and ways of applying attention, they have a particular purpose. They have a function. And learning how to develop the skill in and familiarity with ourselves, with our own mind, with our own personalities, with our own temperaments, and seeing, well, what works for us? What is beneficial? What protects and guards the mind so that the wholesome states of mind have an opportunity to flourish, and the unskillful states of mind have an opportunity to settle, to dissolve, to be let go of, finally. So that these mindfulness in its different aspects is a key factor. The last quality that is considered part of the characteristics of mindfulness is the having put away longing and displeasure for the world, or having, oftentimes it's translated as having put away covetousness and grief for the world. So that the tendency to either be drawn into desire and aversion, liking and disliking, wanting, not wanting, those that flip-flopping back and forth of the mind, where the mind is either being attracted or repelled, and to really start to get actually start to get bored with that. Because we tend to allay our the things that we dislike, we don't want, you know, with something that's interesting, fascinating, that we can be attracted to. We can get some longing and something pleasurable going, but that it can't sustain itself. Now we get fed up with that, and then we get averse to things. And so that back and forth is just, I mean, it's so typical of how the human condition is, but it there is, say, the way out, which is, of course, the whole purpose of the Buddha's teachings, is giving us a way out, giving us a way to direct attention to that which is truly peaceful, is settled.